Good evening, everyone, and welcome to this mindfulness evening. As Kim mentioned, I was invited here this week to teach a few different sessions, in particular this evening's session. What I'd like to do this evening is to give sort of a general overview of mindfulness practice, included in that two mindfulness meditations. And we're going to have a little break in the middle, so nearly an hour, then about a 15-minute break in another session. So mindfulness meditation in each, and then I'll give a general overview and then plenty of opportunity for you to ask questions as well. Mindfulness actually, as it was originally defined centuries ago in the ancient Buddhist tradition, was mindfulness really means memory, to remember. And it's all about being able to remember the object, i.e. being able to focus on an object without becoming distracted. So what we're really talking about is developing and cultivating our attention skills. And so, of course, there are many benefits to mindfulness practice. Because by strengthening our mindfulness, we're going to be developing a calm, clear, focused mind, which means we're going to be more effective in everything we do, everything at work, in sport, in leisure time. We're going to have a much more calm, peaceful mind, much less stress, much better mental balance, much less agitation in the mind. And also we are really going to become the masters of our mind. Now we really are the slaves of our mind. We're often caught up in all of our thinking and emotions and memories. We're often overwhelmed by these things and really suffer because of that. And with this mindfulness practice, we'll really, not only will our mind become much more calm and clear and focused, but we'll also become the masters of our mind. And also, this practice is really going to give us the foundation for really being able to develop inner happiness and well-being, something that we're really searching for, I think, in our life. So to begin, I thought it'd be nice to actually start with a short mindfulness meditation, because if we want our mindfulness practice to really progress, then the key to success is continuity. And here, continuity not only means that it's important to have a daily mindfulness meditation practice, but also it's important to continue to cultivate and work on mindfulness throughout the day. So if we only do one of those two things, if we only have a little bit of mindfulness meditation each morning, or we don't do that and we simply try to be mindful throughout the day, I think you'll find it's going to be a struggle to progress in our practice. But if we do both of these together, if we have a daily mindfulness meditation in the morning, and then on top of that, throughout the day, we're really working on improving our mindfulness, these two things together is the key to success, to improving our mindfulness and deriving all of these benefits out of that practice. So having said that, let's start with a short mindfulness practice, and then I'll go in and explaining a lot more about this practice. Okay, so make yourselves nice and comfortable. So letting go of any external distractions. Simply allow your awareness to descend into your body, filling the entire space of your body. Simply becoming aware of sensations throughout the body. And if you notice any areas of tightness or tension in any part of the body, then use the out-breath to relax and release that tightness or tension to the best of your ability. And bring your awareness to the area of your face and soften and relax all the muscles in the face. The mouth and jaw soft and relaxed. And all the muscles around the eyes soft and relaxed. In this way, allowing the entire body to become completely relaxed, completely at ease. At the same time, keeping the back nice and straight. And relaxing more deeply with each out-breath. And allowing the breathing to settle into its natural rhythm. Not trying to control or regulate the breath in any way. Simply allow the breathing to flow naturally, effortlessly. And with each out-breath, letting go of any thoughts that may have arisen. And give yourself permission to let go of any worries or concerns about the past or the future for the duration of this short meditation. Letting go of all of these thoughts and simply allowing the mind to come to rest in the stillness of the present moment. Simply focusing on the sensations of the breath throughout the body. Wherever you most distinctly notice sensations associated with the breath. And maintaining an ongoing flow of mindfulness of the sensations of the breath throughout the body. Wherever you happen to notice sensations associated with the breath. you find that you've got distracted, then without getting upset, the first thing to do is simply relax and then release the distraction and very gently return to focusing on the breath. Maintaining that flow of mindfulness throughout the entire cycle of each in and out breath. What I'd like to do first is give a little bit of an overview of this mindfulness practice, so we sort of understand clearly what we're trying to do in this practice. We are trying to develop certain qualities in this mindfulness practice. And the first quality that we're really trying to cultivate, and I think this is something very important in our modern society, and that is relaxation. And this is something that's often left out in these sorts of practices. Because often we come into these sort of practices and, you know, we're told to sort of focus on the breath. And in our modern society, our background is we often lead very fast-paced, hectic lives, have a lot of stress in our life, a lot of agitation. Our minds tend to be very chaotic. And then in our daily life, when we have to focus on something, because our minds are so chaotic, we put a lot of tension in our focus. We're always tensing when we focus. And if we only have to focus for a short time, that can sort of work. But we know from our own experience, if we have to focus longer time with this tension, then we often get completely exhausted and we often get very agitated as well and even start to get headaches. And so this is often how people come into meditation practice, with this sort of state of mind. And then when they're asked to focus on the breath, then of course their minds are very chaotic, so then they clamp down on the breath. And then usually what happens is after about 3 or 4 seconds, they're off somewhere, thinking about something. And then often some long time later we think, oh, hang on, I'm supposed to be on the breath. We get frustrated, we get upset. We come back and we clamp down even harder. We think because that's what we lack. We have to clamp down harder. And then we have all sorts of problems in our practice, in our meditation. It just does not work. And then we often complain that meditation makes us tired. We get headaches from meditating and it simply becomes a mess. And that is because we need to relax. This is the first thing we need to do in our meditation. We need to relax the body. We need to relax the mind. Of course, the fault we need to overcome here is tension. So often in these sorts of mindfulness practices, this is not emphasized enough, I think. And then people have all sorts of problems. I would expect that most problems that people have in the beginning phase of these sorts of practices is because of this. We're simply too tight, we're too tense, we're just simply trying too hard. We need to relax, 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 relax. So we need to make sure that we relax the body, we relax the mind. This is the basis of any practice, particularly this mindfulness practice. And I think that's something we all need to pay attention to, because we all tend to come into this with this very agitated, tense, stressed mind from our daily lives. So then if we can really focus a lot initially on just simply relaxing, then the second quality we're trying to cultivate here with this mindfulness practice is stability. We need to try and stabilize the mind. Of course, the fault here is distraction. We try to focus on the breath or some object and we just continually get distracted. So again, when we're trying to stabilize the mind, it needs to be on the basis of a relaxed body and mind, and that when we do become distracted, not to get frustrated and upset, but rather to be happy to notice that we've noticed that we're distracted, and then very gently come back to focusing. So we just keep doing that, keep doing that, keep doing that, and then slowly, slowly, our stability will improve. We'll be able to focus better and better and have less and less distraction. And then when we are working on really improving our stability of our focus, then the third quality we can work on is clarity, to improving the clarity of our attention, to focus more clearly on the object. And of course, the fault we're trying to overcome there is dullness. So there we can simply be, if we're becoming a little bit dull, we just sharpen our focus, keep sharpening the focus, without, of course, getting tense. So these are the qualities that we are trying to really cultivate in this mindfulness practice. Any questions about any of this? Yeah.
How do you train the clarity without thinking?
That's why we need to make sure we've worked on this.
Yeah.
If, and this is the order we need to do them in. There's no point trying to do this with tension as a beginner. The really, the first thing we really need to do is to really work on relaxing, 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 relaxing. If we really can't cultivate that, we're never going to really achieve these. I mean, you probably noticed in daily life, if you're really tense, you can maybe be able to focus on something clearly, but only for a short time. Then you just get completely exhausted or you get completely agitated. So this is not a solution. So what we need to do is to really cultivate these two qualities well. They need to be on the basis of relaxation. So again, in the beginning point, I wouldn't worry too much about this. The first thing we need to really work on is relaxation. Then when we're really starting to relax a little bit, then we can start to work on more just stabilizing the attention. And again, at that point, not worry too much about this. Just really, if we're always distracted, just focus on that. Keep coming back, keep coming back, keep coming back, very patiently, very relaxed. And when our mind starts to become more stable, then we can start to work on this. Because if we don't have this and this, we're not going to be able to effectively cultivate this. Each one builds on the next one builds on the previous. So again, in the beginning point, I wouldn't be too worried about this. Rather work here, then there, in that order.
And then if you've done meditation for 15 years or something, can you then work on it?
Oh, no. I mean,
and how?
I mean, no, I mean, it could be, I mean, again, the problem here is dullness. So with these, you know, assuming we've really reduced our tension, these are the two main faults that we're really trying to overcome. You know, we sort of oscillate between these. Of course, prevention is the best cure.
Okay.
So how do we prevent these is a couple of things we can do. First is to make sure that we meditate short time. If we try and meditate too long, these definitely will come into our practice, for sure. So the catchphrase here is quality over quantity. I mean, it's much better to meditate for 15 minutes with focus rather than try and meditate for an hour, because we're just going to either become completely dull or completely distracted. Mm-hmm. And then we just, if we do that, we're just actually strengthening our habit of becoming dull and distracted, which is what we're trying to overcome. Mm-hmm. So quality over quantity. So keep the session short. Also, of course, where we meditate at home is important to have really good conditions. Of course, if it's too warm, dullness. If it's too cold, we're probably going to get agitated and distracted. Too much light, maybe also. Too dark, get dull. So these things at home we can control. The temperature, the amount of light, also hopefully trying to control a little bit the noise factor as well. Also with the dullness, and this is a thing that we sort of in our modern society we don't really look at, and then it's a big problem, is sleep. In our modern society, I think in many cultures, people suffer sleep deprivation because we got busy lives, busy, 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 not enough time. Where do we get time? We cut our sleep, less and less sleep. If we do that, we're just going to have dullness. It's just not going to work. We need to make sure we have enough sleep. So this is also, and the other big thing in our modern society, particularly not so much dullness, but it can be, but more distraction and agitation, is diet. I mean, our, you know, in our modern society, we've got, seems like an epidemic of ADHD, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. Of course, there are many factors that contribute, genetics and so forth. But one, I think one huge factor in our modern society, unfortunately, is diet, you know, particularly sugar, too much sugar in the diet. So these things we can control a little bit. Of course, exercise. I mean, really, exercise is very helpful for meditation practice. If we really have a healthy body, that's going to help a lot. And then there was one other thing. Oh, and then the posture. The posture is important. Here, in terms of posture, of course, we can get all very fancy with the posture, but the two key elements in the posture is simply to have a relaxed body and to keep the back straight. If you're sitting here like this, I'd say there's a pretty high chance you'll get dull. So we need to make sure we have our back nice and straight. And also, what we should be doing with the posture is making sure that it's stable and that we can basically forget about the body. If it's a lot of pain in the body, that's not going to help, you know. So we need to find a posture where we, and that's where also, you know, physical body work like yoga can be very helpful. We can then really make the body more flexible. But really just find a posture where we can really just relax and forget about the body and keep the body as still as possible. Because if we keep, you know, doing this in meditation, of course we're going to get distracted. So these are certain things that we can do to help us prevent distraction and dullness. But then, of course, if they come in, and they will, then there's a few things we can do. For instance, maybe I'll introduce that now. With both of these, in terms of distraction, particularly if we're focusing on the breath in this meditation, then the out-breath is a natural time to let go of distraction. So there are sort of little key phrases we can remember to what to do. So for distraction, and again with distraction, if we find ourselves distracted, then we can use the out-breath to do the following. So then during the out-breath, the first thing we need to do to not get frustrated and upset that we've got distracted is we simply relax. And breathing out is a good time just to relax. And then we simply let go of the distraction, release the distraction. And to let go doesn't mean get annoyed and try and push it away. Release just means simply, basically just drop it and then come back to the breath. So the third one is return. So we can, when we're faced with distraction, just simply relax, let go, come back, return. With the dullness, often with dullness, people become dull in the practice because they're sort of getting bored with the practice. They're losing interest in the practice. So when we're noticing we're getting very dull and spaced out, then the first thing we can do is to refresh our interest in the practice. And this is good to do on the in-breath. On the in-breath, we just, remembering the benefits of the practice, we refresh our interest in the practice. Then we can restore our attention on the object, so hold the object again, and then to retain that flow of mindfulness. So refresh, restore, retain. And this can be done on the in-breath. So what you'll find in this practice is that we tend to either go into distraction or dullness. And so we can sort of do this balancing act on each breath, meaning on each in-breath, we're sharpening our focus on the object. And then on each out-breath, we're relaxing, releasing any distraction and return to the object. So we can do that balancing act on each breath. Any other questions? Yeah.
What about involuntary tensions from subconscious emotions?
Yeah. What you're going to find in this practice is that, particularly if we do a fairly regular practice and we start to deepen in our practice, you're going to find all sorts of both physical and mental experiences. On the physical side, if we really have a good posture and we're really starting to get into the practice and relaxing and so forth, what's happening at a more subtle level is the sort of the energies in our body are starting to balance. Now they're completely out of whack. You know, they're completely out of whack. And so what you'll find is that one, in that rebalancing process through this relaxation and focus, you'll have all sorts of physical experiences coming up. I mean, in the meditation text, you get a list about this long of all the possible experiences. So some common experiences for people in this practice, they have a lot of heat, vibrations, tingling, heavy body, small body, big body, no sense of body, all sorts of experiences. And some of them are very pleasant. Some of them are really strange. Some are maybe not so pleasant. But the advice for all of these experiences is the same. Don't get caught up in them. They're just part of the process of the meditation. They'll come and they'll go. They'll come and they'll go. Because unfortunately, when these things come up, people get caught up in them. When they have some, like, you know, sometimes we have this sort of blissful flow of sensations in the body and people go, wow, that's so nice. I want that. Let me try and hold that and recreate it. And then the whole practice comes to a grinding halt. Or they have some very strange, like I said, like floating, heavy body, big, not much of a sense of a body. And then they sort of go, oh, what's that? And then, of course, they have some aversion and worry about that. And then the practice comes to a halt. So with all of these experiences, and you will get all sorts of these experiences, is you just let it go, let it go, let it go. Don't get caught up in it. Just keep to the practice. If, of course, you're having a particular sensation in the body every meditation, then you may like to look at your posture. Maybe you're doing something funny in your posture which is causing a lot of tension in some part of the body. So check the posture. But otherwise, you will find, like you said, a lot of these things coming up. But that's just a natural process of the balancing of the body. And often it's a good sign that we are moving forward in the practice. So that's on the physical level. On the mental level, you're also going to have all sorts of things coming up. Because, you know, as I briefly mentioned before, we're really the slaves of our mind now. And that means that when a thought or emotion or memory comes up in our mind, we just identify with it, we follow it. We're always following our thoughts and emotions. And we're getting caught up in our stories and often getting overwhelmed by these mental events. And then often when some unpleasant thing comes up, an unpleasant thought or emotion or memory comes up, often we don't know how to deal with it. So what do? We try to stuff it back down. We try to suppress it. And of course, that doesn't deal with it. All that that does is it often then manifests as physical problems in the body. In fact, I think a huge percentage of our physical ailments these days are through suppressing negative mental events. And then often also we project a lot of this negativity onto the people around us. So in this practice, of course, when we're attending to the breath or whatever the object happens to be, then we're in a state where we're not doing this. So what you'll find, again, particularly if you're doing this getting deeper into the practice, you'll get all sorts of stuff coming up. And again, the same instruction. Sometimes you'll get pleasant, you know, you get a lot of joy in the mind. Sometimes some unpleasant memories come up or unpleasant thoughts. Again, the same instruction. Don't get caught up in them. Don't get caught up in craving the pleasant things and having aversion to the unpleasant things. Is just let them pass, let them be. Because they'll come and they'll go. And actually, this process of simply allowing these things to come up and pass is extremely therapeutic. It's a healing practice. Because often, a lot of these things that we're suppressing that are really hurting us, if we simply allow them to come and acknowledge them and let them go, often that really is a very healing thing to do. So again, whether we have these physical or mental things come up, don't get caught up in them. Just let them go, let them go, and keep to the practice. And then you'll progress. Okay? Yeah.
I'm not sure I really got the word clarity.
Sure.
When I think of the word clarity, I think wisdom, understanding, insight. Oh. But I didn't really get the grip on what you've meant.
Yeah. Of course we can talk about a clear understanding, but here we're talking about just a clear perception. To be able to clearly, I mean, like an analogy would be, an analogy for this would be if you're looking in the room and it's quite dark, there's something you can see there, but you can't clearly see what it is. So there's lack of clarity, visual clarity. Of course, we're not using the eyes in the meditation, but that's sort of what the clarity means, is that, again, we can see something, but it's not clearly appearing. For example, often when people in this practice are asked to focus on the sensation, very popular to focus on the sensations here. And so when people first focus here, either they perceive nothing or something vague. That's lack of clarity. Meaning that if you keep focusing there more and more clearly, you focus better, then you're going to start to notice all sorts of sensations here. And all sorts. Are these new? Or were they there all along? They were there all along, but because we didn't have any clarity, our mind was dull, we didn't pick them up. I mean, they're there all the time, but I mean, now, do we feel anything here? If we just look there right now for a second, do we feel any sensation here? Probably not. Does that mean there's no sensations here? No, it just means that our mind is not very clear. With clarity, you will pick up more and more subtle sensations. So this is clarity.
Like sharpening the perception?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, yes.
Concentration.
Sorry?
Concentration?
Yeah. Concentration, of course. But, I mean, all of this is concentration. These are all aspects of concentration. I mean, yeah. So we need to concentrate well, we need to be relaxed. And concentration is also being able to focus without becoming distracted and then focus clearly. All three of those are part of good concentration. To be relaxed, clear, and stable. Okay. Then, in this mindfulness practice, we can use one of many different objects. And probably most of you, or those of you who've done a little bit of this mindfulness practice, probably the object that you used was the breath. Mindfulness of breathing is probably one of the most common forms of this practice. And I think for most of us, this is the object that's going to work best. I mean, basically the advice is in this practice is which object to use. Use the one that works best for you. And for different people, it's different objects that works best. But for many of us, probably that's going to be the breath for a couple of reasons. One is that that most of us are living in the head. We're all conceptual, discursive. We're thinking all the time. So much so that we've lost touch with even our physical body. So by focusing on the sensations of the breath, it gets us out of our conceptual mind and into the body. So that's a big plus. Also, most of our conceptual thinking is we're diving in the past into the future. Very rarely are we in the present moment. And certainly from a Buddhist perspective, living in the past and the future is the source for unhappiness. And now there's even some modern studies that are coming to the same conclusion, that living in the past and the future is the source for unhappiness. And so if we can really get into the present moment, then we have a big advantage. So, of course, the sensations of the breath only happen in the present moment. So by focusing on them, it gets us out of our conceptual mind into the body, and it gets us out of the past and the future into the present moment. So that's a big plus for many of us. And of course, the sensations of breath is something physical, not so difficult to focus on compared to some other objects. And with the breath, there are a couple of variations of that which can be helpful for those three qualities of relaxation, stability, and clarity. The first variation of this practice, the full body, is what we basically did a little bit in the meditation just now. And that is to simply notice sensations anywhere in the body associated with the breath. And that can be down in the abdomen area, chest area, around the nostrils, anywhere where we notice sensations associated with the breath. And this is a very large area, and this focus is very good for the first quality we mentioned, relaxation. So if you find that you're coming into this mindfulness practice with a lot of tension, and I think many of us do that, we come into this practice, in fact, a lot of people come to this is because they have a lot of tension in the mind, tension in the body. And so if our main goal or the thing we're really emphasizing is to release that tension, this is an excellent practice, is to simply focus on sensations of the breath throughout the body. And particularly on each out-breath, is just emphasizing that relaxation. And this is something also particularly good to do in the evening, before you go to bed, or go to sleep at least. This practice is very good with using the, what's called in yoga, the shavasana, the corpse posture. Lying flat on your back, your hands a little bit to the side. So this is what you can do as you go to bed, is you lie in your bed like this, flat on your back, and then you simply focus on the sensations of the breath throughout the body, really emphasizing relaxation, releasing any tension in the body and the mind. Because often at the end of the day, long day at work, we're quite tense in the body and the mind and very agitated. And so this is a very good practice for relaxing. So it's also a mindfulness practice, and it's also a very good transition to sleep. So we can simply do that in our bed for as long as we can have a little bit of alertness. That may be 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes. When we start to get a little bit drowsy, then all we do is we mentally note, okay, I'm finished my mindfulness practice. And then you move out of that posture into whatever posture you use for sleep. In that way, if you only associate that corpse posture with meditation, you'll find that it's actually a very good posture to use, particularly for releasing tension and in fact, doing a mindfulness practice. And this is also very good for people who have, like, back problems. You know, some people have back problems or knee problems, and they find that sitting in any posture is just a lot of pain. So then we can just lie down and meditate. And this is very good for this. Another variation, and this is what we're going to do after the break shortly, is to focus on the area of the abdomen. And this is emphasized in a lot of mindfulness practices, just this area here, the rising and lowering of the abdomen. Now, because this is a pretty big area of focus, it's fairly easy to focus on. So this is good for working with stability, to stabilize the mind, to help overcome distraction. The third variation, which a lot of mindfulness traditions emphasize, is to focus on the sensations of the breath at the entrance of the nostrils. This is a very small area of focus. Because it's a small area of focus, it forces us to be more clear. So therefore, this is good for clarity, to improve clarity of our attention. So depending on where we're working, we can use any one of those three. If we're really finding we're having a lot of tension in the body or the mind, this is very good. If we really just have a lot of distraction and we're just trying to help stabilize the mind, overcome distraction, this is good. If we really want to improve our clarity of focus, make it more clear, then this is good to focus on. So all around, the breath, I think, is a very good choice. Another object that sometimes is emphasized, and I think can also be something really helpful in our modern society, is to focus on the mind itself. Now, many people who try to do this find it quite difficult. One is, of course, the mind is not physical, and we have such a strong habit of always following our thoughts and emotions that to just focus on the mind, many people find that difficult. But in this practice, what we're doing, of course, is just looking at our mind and seeing what's going on in the mind. So we're trying to be like this observer or witness of our mind. So we're just sort of stepping back a little bit and just looking at our mind and just observing, you know, thoughts and emotions as they arise and pass in the mind. Now, normally, of course, when something comes up in our mind, we don't watch it. We just identify with it. We follow it. We get caught up in our thoughts and emotions, and we often get overwhelmed by them. So again, we're the slaves of our mind. And if they're unpleasant, we simply try to suppress them, and that just creates all sorts of problems as well. Whereas in this mindfulness practice, if we are simply observing our mind, then we are observing thoughts and emotions and so forth as they arise and pass. Because every time we identify with our thoughts and emotions, or we try to suppress them, we're feeding them. So the habit of all this mental garbage coming up will get stronger and stronger and stronger. Meaning that if we have a lot of this stuff come up and we start fighting with it, wanting it to go away, it's just like throwing petrol on the fire. It just gets worse. And so then we get worse. We're just spiraling out of control. So we don't have to fight with any of this stuff, because fighting just makes it worse. All we have to do is just step back and observe. Don't do anything. Just observe. Just watch these things as they arise and pass. And every time you do that, you're not feeding it, which means the habit of this mental garbage coming up will get weaker and weaker and weaker. Your mind will naturally become more still, calm, and focused. And also, then we are becoming the masters of our mind, meaning that also what's going to happen by doing this practice is then in the future, if some strong mental event comes up, strong negative thought, emotional memory comes up, will simply be able to be present with it and not get overwhelmed by it. In fact, these negative thoughts, emotions, and memories can only harm us if we either identify with them or we try to fight with them and suppress them. If we observe them, they can't do anything to us. Because what is really a thought, emotion, or memory? It's virtually nothing. It's not like someone with a big stick physically damaging us. These things are virtually nothing. They have no power in themselves. They only have power if we give them power by identifying with them or trying to suppress them. So if we can do this practice, we will really become the masters of our mind. Our mind will naturally become more quiet and still. And again, if some strong mental event arises, we'll simply we'll be able to be present with it and not get overwhelmed. So I think for this reason, using the mind as the object of our mindfulness practice can be extremely beneficial. You had a question.
How do we not identify with a thought when we recognize the thought?
Yeah. In fact, recognizing it means you're not identifying with it. So
how?
How is through practice. So, again, there's a very famous quote from a great Indian master in Buddhism, Shantideva. He says, from the 8th century, he says, no matter how difficult something seems, everything with practice becomes easy. And that's true. It's true. The thing is that we have, for the last 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years, have developed the habit of always following our thoughts and emotions. Always. Always, 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 always. All we got to do is to start doing something different. And of course, to expect from one day to the next to be able to watch our thoughts and emotions, completely unrealistic. But if we patiently do our best, and of course at the beginning what's going to happen is we're not going to be able to watch them. But what's going to happen is now, of course, when something comes up, we follow it and we get caught up with it for a long time. When we start to do this practice, what we're going to notice, we'll get caught up, probably, and we're getting carried away, and then at some point, instead of continuing, some point we're going to notice, oh, I'm getting carried away, and then we'll let it go. So instead of getting caught up for 10 minutes, maybe we get caught up for 2 minutes, and then we let it go. And we keep doing that, and then we get caught up for 1 minute, 30 seconds, 15 seconds, 5 seconds, and then we'll start to notice that we're starting to get caught up, we let it go. And then we'll not get caught up. But that's a process. And that's going to take time, you know.
And is that the same, like, would you, first I would ask, how do you know when you have recognized your mind? I mean, how do you know that when you're doing it, not getting caught up?
Because
is that the same as when you have, like, silence in your mind?
No. So the fact that you know that you're caught up means you're not caught up anymore because you've recognized it. If you're caught up, you're lost. You're lost. You're caught up.
But the moment you recognize you're caught up,
you're not caught up anymore. No. You're not caught up anymore. No. You're not caught up anymore. So that's the thing, you know. So if you notice it, then you're not caught up anymore. And so you just have to keep doing that patiently and you will start to develop the ability to not get caught up. Of course, the thing we need to remember here is not to have unrealistic expectations, you know, because we all want it now. I want it now. And then, of course, people try it for a couple of days or a week and they say it's not working and they give up. I mean.
So why is it not silence then? Why is it not stop thinking when you're not cutting?
Right. So what you will notice, of course, is in this practice, looking at the mind, we're not trying to make the mind still. Have you ever tried to make the mind still? It does not work. Because to make the mind still is you're fighting with the mind. That's just going to create more turbulence. So we don't have to do anything with this practice. We're not having to try to control anything. We're not trying to make the mind still. All we're simply doing is sitting back and watching. That's it. And if there's a lot of mental events there, that's okay. We just watch it. If there's nothing there, we just watch the stillness. Either way, it's okay. It doesn't matter. And you will find that the more you can do that, and the more you don't get caught up in it, then the habit of this stuff coming up will get weaker and weaker and weaker. And over time, our mind will naturally become more and more still. And then we will have the, of course, sometimes we need to think to do things. So then, but then we are in control. We're driving the thinking process instead of the mind assaulting us with all sorts of stuff. So again, we're not trying to make the mind still. The mind will become more quiet as a side effect of simply watching it because we're not feeding it anymore. So this is what we've got to do. I mean, it's so simple. Not easy, but it's not easy because we don't have the habit. What we've got to do is start developing the habit, and then really you'll find that what you'll notice is that small things you'll be able to start to catch first. Of course, big things will still really overwhelm us a little bit, but we'll be able to step back a bit. But slowly, 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 we can do it. Yeah, one more question, then we'll have a break. Yeah. So falling asleep. So again, I think unfortunately in our modern society, one of the main reasons for that is we don't get enough sleep. We're cutting corners on sleep. If you do that, you will fall asleep meditation. The only solution is get more sleep. Make sure you have enough sleep. And also it's helpful to meditate early in the morning when you're most fresh. Of course, if you're trying to meditate at the end of the day, you've had a hectic, busy life, a day is probably you're going to get quite sleepy. Then I would suggest using the full body and just relaxing and doing as what you can and then going to sleep. So make sure you get enough sleep. Make sure that you don't meditate after meals because, again, you're going to be sleepy. So don't meditate after breakfast, lunch or dinner. It's a waste of time. And then also, of course, make sure the posture, that you have a straight back, because otherwise if you're sitting here like this, you will get sleepy, of course. And, of course, here it's a little bit warm because quite a lot of people in this room. So when you're at home, don't turn up the heating too much, rather a little bit fresh. Don't have too much clothes on. If you have too much warm clothes, of course, you'll get sleepy. So these are things that we can, and again, keep the session short, 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 short. And that can be helpful for sleep, for the sleepiness. And the other thing, reason I mentioned is that a reason why people get really sleepy is they sort of get bored with the practice. They're doing the practice because someone said it's good for you. Oh, I've got to do it. Someone told me it's good for me. Okay, I'll do it. And then we go. I mean, do we get sleepy if we're watching an exciting TV program? Do we get sleepy if we're watching something boring on TV? Yes. Do we get sleepy if it's interesting? No. So the key element here is to make sure we're interested in the practice, to really appreciate the benefits of the practice and understand that this is going to bring me a lot of benefit. Because if you don't have interest in the practice, you will. One, you'll get bored, you'll get sleepy, and you'll stop doing it. So really it's important to really appreciate the benefits of this practice and then really have interest in doing the practice. And also there, I think it can be very helpful to occasionally do it in a group setting. You get like the group energy. Yeah. So that can be helpful as well to get the interest because, you know, if you're sort of doing it on your own at home after some time, you think, well, you know, I'm doing this and I seem to be the only one who's doing this. Okay, I give up. So I think it can be very helpful from time to time on a weekly basis even, to get together with some other people, meditate together to get that sort of group energy. That can be also very helpful. Okay, on that note, let's take a short break and we'll come back. So 10, 15 minute break. Before we go into the next mindfulness practice, I thought just a couple of words about the posture you might find helpful. With posture, the two main elements with posture is to have a relaxed body and to keep the back nice and straight. But just a few words about some of the other aspects of the posture. The legs. If you're sitting on a cushion, then there's a few different postures you can have with the legs. Of course, if you're very flexible, you can do the full lotus, you know, where you have both feet on both opposite thighs. I think for many of us it's quite difficult. Then another option is to do the half lotus where you have one foot up and the one underneath. If that's not possible, then you can just do the cross leg posture. Sometimes people find that sitting cross-legged, it cuts off the circulation. If you find that, then a variation of that you can do is what's called the Burmese posture. And that is having one leg in front of the other. Instead of the legs crossed, simply have one leg in front of the other. You can do that. Ideally, with the legs, it's ideally to have 3 points of contact, so it's very stable. If you're sitting here like this, then not so stable. And often if the knees are higher than the hips, it's a sign that there's a lot of strain on the lower back. So you have a lot of strain in the lower back and in the groin area. So we should try to make sure that the knees are at least level with the hips, ideally touching the cushion. Then it's more stable. So if they're up here like this and you're having a lot of strain in the lower back and you're always straightening your back like this, it means you're not sitting on enough cushions. So put more cushions so that you should find that your back is more naturally straight. You're not straining it to keep it straight. And again, ideally with the knees touching, then it's very stable. Some people have problems with the knees. Then we can use like a meditation stool. I think there's a few over there, where you tuck your legs underneath the stool. You're not sitting cross-legged. Some people find that better. Also, some people find that even that is painful. Then, of course, we can sit in a chair. It's no problem, just feet flat on the floor. And some people even find sitting in a chair, they got back problems. Then you can just use the corpse posture, lie flat down. That's also acceptable. The hands. Generally in the Tibetan Buddhist tradition, the sort of recommended posture with the hands is to have the right hand resting in the left with the thumbs touching. And that's sort of symbolic of the two aspects of the path of wisdom and compassion and the union of wisdom and compassion and just resting in your lap like this. So that's sort of the traditional Tibetan posture. If you find that uncomfortable, then you can just put your hands on your knees. It's no real big deal with the hands. Again, the back is straight. The head, if it's too low, of course, you get dull. Too high, might get a bit agitated. So just so that naturally your eyes would be a little bit downward. With the eyes, generally recommended to have them slightly open. If you have them closed, of course, normally when we close our eyes, that's a signal to go to sleep. So we get very dull. And if we have them too open, maybe too much light, agitation. This is something you can experiment with. If you're a sort of person who gets very much agitated, you may even find having them slightly open is too much, maybe lightly closed. And certainly if you're the sort of person that gets very sleepy or dull in meditation, then I very much recommend them to have at least slightly open to let some light in. But that's something you can experiment with. So that's just a few things about the posture. But again, the main thing with the posture is the body relaxed, the back straight, and then also in the meditation to keep the body as still as possible and avoid any unnecessary scratching and itching and movement because that's just going to distract. So really try to keep the body as still as possible. Okay, with that in mind, let's do another mindfulness practice. And this one, we're going to be focusing in the area of the abdomen, okay? So then finding a nice, comfortable posture. So as always, we begin by preparing the body. So again, keeping the back nice and straight. Allow your awareness to descend into your body. Simply becoming aware of sensations throughout the body. Using the out-breath to relax and release any tightness or tension in any part of the body. Bring your awareness to the area of your face and soften and relax all the muscles in the face. Mouth and jaw soft and relaxed. And all the muscles around the eyes soft and relaxed. Allowing the entire body to become completely relaxed, completely at ease. Allowing the breathing to settle into its natural rhythm. And preparing the mind, setting it in a state of ease and relaxation. By not dwelling in the past, not anticipating the future, simply allowing the mind to come to rest in the present moment. Through focusing on the sensations of the breath throughout the body, wherever you most distinctly notice sensations associated with the breath. Now narrow your focus and simply focus on the sensations of the breath in the area of the abdomen, focusing on the sensations of the rising and lowering of the abdomen as you breathe. Maintaining an ongoing flow of mindfulness of the sensations of the breath in the area of the abdomen during the entire cycle of each in and out breath. find that you've become distracted, then without getting upset, first thing to do is simply relax, then release the distraction, and very gently return to focusing on the breath. So relax, release, and return. Or if you find that you're just becoming dull or spaced out, then the first thing to do is to refresh your interest in the practice, and then restore your attention on the breath, and then retain the ongoing flow of mindfulness of the breath. So refresh, restore, and retain. Or if you find that you're constantly becoming distracted, then you might like to experiment with counting the breath to help stabilize the mind. So for this, at the end of the in-breath, mentally note one, and then focus on the sensations of the breath during the out-breath and the following in-breath. And then mentally note two. This way you can count the breath 1 up to 10 and start back at 1. And if you lose count at any time, just Just simply go back to one. Is there any questions coming out of that practice? Anything not clear or confusing or not sure about? Yeah.
So the different focus areas in the breath.
Yeah.
Do you always use one or do you?
Okay. Yeah. Good question. The general recommendation with this mindfulness practice is to pick an object and pick the object that works best for you and then stick with that. If we keep changing the object, we it's a little bit counterproductive. Having said that, if we decide the breath is the best for us, then maybe we decide that, for example, we're normally going to use the nostrils. But then on a particular day, we're so agitated and tense, then focusing here is probably just going to make us more tense. So then we can go back to this, just focusing on and releasing the tension. And we may do that the entire session or just enough to release and then go back here. Or if we're getting distracted a lot, we may just go back to the abdomen for some minutes to stabilize and then go back here. So that we can do. So using those as like a bit of a fallback in case things are not going so well. But in general, it's helpful to just find an object and stick with that. Another option that's possible is you know, using the mind, I think, in for us in our modern society can be really very beneficial. But many people find that they can't even begin this because they're trying and just swept away all the time and they just get frustrated. So then what you can do is start with the breath and use that for some weeks or months or even longer until you start to relax, get a little bit stable. Then later you can go here because then you have a little bit more ability to focus. And then this could be a little bit easier. So you could do that. But, you know, one day to the next, switching between the breath and the mind and some other object is not so productive. It's not as helpful to do like that. In terms of the subtlety of the object, yes, but you don't have to go through the process. But it could be, I mean, it could be helpful that if we have a lot of tension, we really start there and then we do sort of move that way. But not like on a daily basis swapping. But, yeah, we may find that for the first few weeks this is good. And then we find we're a little bit more relaxed and then we work here for a while and then we maybe move here and then finally we move here. But there's no necessity to do that. I mean, we can sort of start with one and just keep going with that if we find that that's the best. So it depends on how we progress a little bit. Anything else anyone would like to ask? Okay. Just a couple of more things before we finish up this evening. In that meditation we just did, I introduced this counting. Some people find it helpful, some people just find it a distraction. The idea, of course, with counting is that, you know, often we're trying to focus on the breath and we just constantly get distracted. Get caught away in our conceptual mind. Whereas counting is conceptual activity, but it's related to the breath. So by occupying our mind with counting, it helps to avoid getting caught up in other distractions. So if you find that you're really getting distracted a lot and that counting seems to help you focus better, then use it. But eventually you'll need to let it go because it is still conceptual activity and we're trying to focus on the sensations of the breath. So what I'd recommend is if you find it useful, bring it in when you need to. Don't overuse it. And then eventually you'll find that you'll go beyond it. You won't need to use it eventually. But if it's helpful now, then use it. Similarly to that, some traditions talk about noting the breath. So instead of counting, mentally counting, some traditions talk about noting, meaning, you know, as you're breathing out, you mentally note breathing out, breathing in, or in, out, in, out. So this is also okay, but if you're going to do this, keep it simple. Don't make it complicated, like, I'm breathing in now, but it's really long. Why is it really long? Then it's just distraction. So don't turn it into a commentary. That's not going to work. So if you're going to use counting or noting, keep it very brief. If you find it a distraction from the beginning, no need to use it. You don't have to use it. So some people find that it doesn't work. It's not helpful. Other people really find it helpful. So if it helps to stabilize, use it, otherwise just forget about it. Now, as I mentioned at the beginning this evening, the key to success in this mindfulness practice is continuity, meaning not only to have a daily meditation practice, to continue to practice the mindfulness and meditation, but to continue to work with mindfulness throughout the day as well. Because if we diligently sit down every morning and we do our mindfulness practice every morning, that's a very good start to the day. But then if we jump up and run around like we normally do, then, you know, 14 hours of running around mindlessly versus 20 minutes of mindful meditation, I think I know what's going to win out. So if we want our mindfulness to really keep developing, then we need to keep working on mindfulness through the day. Of course, at the beginning of the day, it's good to set an intention to say, okay, today I'm really going to try to be as mindful as possible. So that's important. But of course, if we just do that, then probably after 5 minutes, we have forgotten that. Our mindfulness, we've forgotten that, to do that. So what can be very helpful throughout the day is to use triggers to remind us to be mindful. And those triggers can take a number of different forms. One practical way is to pick a few activities that you do regularly each day, like brushing the teeth, eating meals, and so forth, and really make a conscious effort to be present in those activities. I mean, normally what happens in the morning, of course, we're running late, gulping down breakfast very quick, in there brushing the teeth very fast, and while we're brushing them very fast, we're thinking about all the things we have to do that day, running out the door and we're going, did I brush my teeth this morning? And we don't even remember. That's how mindless we were. So particularly with things like brushing the teeth, which are not very long activities, is really just make a conscious effort while you're brushing the teeth, you're focusing on the sensations of the brush on the teeth and so forth, and you're not thinking about anything else. Be present with that activity. Another very good thing to do is with meals. Now, of course, you know, busy in the morning, gulping down breakfast at lunch, oh, we've got a short lunch break, quick, 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 eat, 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 and so forth. We don't even really enjoy our meals. So what can be very helpful, again, is to really be present with eating the meals. And you'll find, actually, you'll enjoy the meals a lot more as well. So there's another bonus with that. You'll actually start tasting the food and actually enjoying your meals more than you do now. So pick some of those activities and really make a conscious effort to be mindful during the day. Another thing, of course, is we can use modern technology to help us. Now, many of us have got the iPhones and smartphones. There's plenty of apps to help us. In fact, there's a very simple app called Mindfulness Bell, free app. You can put it on your phone and you can program it. What it will do at random intervals through the day, every half hour roughly, or hour or 2 hours, however you program it, it will just send a little bell. And then all you do is you stop whatever you do and do a little bit mindfulness exercise. And that can simply be focus on three breaths, just three deep breaths, or just focus on the breath for three breaths. That's it. That's all you need to do. And then you'll find that by doing that at these regular intervals during the day, you'll start to get in the habit of being mindful. So this can be very, very helpful in the daily life. Also, it's, as I said, the beginning of the day, I think, is a good time for doing a little mindfulness meditation. Just a couple of pieces of advice about that before we really wrap it up today is part of the difficulty with having a regular morning meditation is to simply develop the habit. So if you're doing it at different times, then you don't develop a habit. So pick a time and then stick to that time. And then you'll find once you start to develop the habit, it becomes easier because then it's just routine. Every morning at whatever time you pick, that's it. It's time for your 15 or 20 minutes of mindfulness practice. So pick the time and stick to it. Again, quality over quantity. Much better to meditate short time with focus than trying to do too much, because also if you do too much, you're going to find it difficult to sustain and you're going to give up. And if you meditate too long, you're just going to go into dullness and distraction. So pick an amount of time, short time. Depends on us, what ability we have, how long. But often, you know, around the 20 minutes mark is, for many people, a good time to start. Some people find that a little bit long, 15, maybe some people a bit longer, 25 or even 30. One way to gauge is our enthusiasm at the end of the meditation the same as at the beginning? If it's dropping off, you're meditating too long. So keep it short. If you want to meditate longer in the morning, and you can't sustain it, then break your session into two. So if you really feel like you can do 45 minutes every morning, then break it into two 20-minute sessions or so, with a little two-minute break in the middle. That'll help. Also, it's good to set a timer. Do a fixed amount of time each day. There's a couple of good reasons for that. One is that if you don't set a timer, then on days where it's a struggle, you'll just give up. And then you won't develop any perseverance. Because to have the habit, you need to have the perseverance as well. So if you don't have a timer, again, when things are going difficult on those days, you'll just give up after 5 or 10 minutes. That's not a good habit to get into. Equally well, on days where things are going well, then you think, oh, it's going well today, I'll just keep going. And then we keep going for how long? Until it starts to go bad. And then we stop. And the thing we remember most about our meditation is how it ended. So if we're always ending in dullness and distraction and frustration, that's what we remember. We're not going to want to meditate again the next day. We're going to start associating meditating with not so good experiences. Whereas if things are going well and the timer goes off and we stop, that's what we remember. And then we're going to be keen and eager to meditate again the following day because we'll remember it was a good experience. So keep that time. And then, of course, as we improve in our practice, we can extend the time a bit, you know. But don't double it. You know, if it's 20 minutes, maybe you go to 23 minutes or 25 minutes. So you can slowly increase it a little bit. So that's just a few tips about the morning meditation practice. And again, one last point and then we'll stop is I think it's also very good not just to start the day with meditation and, of course, trying to cultivate mindfulness through the day, but it's good to end the day on a good note as well. So again, there we can do that corpse posture, lying in the bed, relaxing, mindfulness practice, releasing any tension from the day. So this is practicing the mindfulness, relaxation, and it's also a good transition into bed, into sleep. So this can be a very good way to finish the day as well. Okay, on that note, I've run out of time. Any last questions before we finish this evening? Okay, and thank you for coming along this evening. I hope you got something out of this evening's session.